want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that's how you start your day. How's everybody doing? Welcome to the Ed Springsteen Show once again. I'm your host, Ed Springsteen, right here at the NBM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, and joined as normal by our good friend, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
All right. You know, I like that intro, but I've actually just got off work, so I'm driving, so I can't comply.
Well, you know, you can roll the window down in your car.
I'm on the Dean Snyder, and I will neither confirm nor deny that I am going above the speed limit or not. And, you know, it's under 60 degrees. Sticking my head out the window and trying to scream is just not going to work, my friend.
Hey, listen, man, have you ever heard of road rage? People do it every day. There's no excuses not to, Mr. Martin. People do it every day, so I don't want to hear that. You're trying to tell me you're going to be a law-abiding citizen. Well, okay, I'll give you that one, but come on, man. Don't give me any excuses. I tell you, a lot going on, and I'm going to start this show with a story. And I don't know if you've seen this yet or not
story.
Today.
I love stories. What are you going to tell?
I know. And before anybody gets freaked out or anything else, let me tell you this. You can believe what you want to about it. I don't really care. The sources on this are 100% accurate. They've always been 100% accurate with me, in my opinion. And this is interesting because today there was a shooting in Valley Station that killed a young man who was shot by a female in the household. His name, street name, was Massimo Carlucci. For those of you who don't know, Carlucci is a felon who served time for going to a fair in another place in Kentucky. Him and some of his white supremacist buddies decided to beat up a person of color. Went to jail for it. He is also known to Valley Station people as being one of the drugs and thugs people. He has hookers and all kinds of things. Well, what I'm being told from the inside, and of course the news won't give you the guy's name or anything else. They won't tell you the story about it because they're trying to protect him, and I'll get to why in just a minute. But anyway, this guy has been known out here for a long time. The police know what he does. They've allowed him to do it. The neighbors have been worried about this house for the last year since he moved into it. It's considered a clubhouse for the illegal activities and the illegal people that run in and out of it, one of which is rapper Buckshot. Buckshot the rapper. Now, this isn't the same guy that most people in the hip-hop world know. That's a national name. No, this is a local guy who's a white guy, one of the other supremacists, I can only imagine. You know, who's trying to steal a name and make himself someone. But anyway, apparently Carlucci was in Tennessee. This is the story I'm getting. Make of it what you will. Carlucci was in Tennessee for some time now and called his ex, one of his hookers, who happened to be his ex, and told her to come down to Tennessee and turn some tricks and make some money. She refused, doesn't want that life anymore. Again, this is what I'm being told, right? So he says he's going to come to Louisville and bust her up for refusing him. Well, lo and behold, the person that I was told that was told that by Carlucci is the same one who pulled the trigger and killed him today. Now, we do know that as of tonight, the police have not made any charges against this woman. It's clear cut that she shot him, but there's been no charges. So you can believe what you want to about it, but in something as cut and dry and black and white as this is, so to speak, the charges would have been automatic. And miraculously, they're not there. So it tends one to believe that the insider source that I'm using right now, who just happens to be real close to the people involved there, is probably telling the truth. But the guy that's dead is Massimo Carlucci. Massimo Carlucci actually came onto my radar quite some time ago because of his involvement in the illegal crime out here in this area. But more recently, about 3 months ago, I told a story, and I told everybody on air without mentioning names, that Greg Fisher, your mayor, and Councilman David Yates were meeting with a questionable character out here in Valley Station to work up some cash and some campaign funds. Carlucci was that person. Greg Fisher and David Yates met with Carlucci on a couple of occasions, promise him some legitimate tax money to open up a legitimate front for himself, as long as he funnels some of it back to them for campaign or whatever. So take of it what you will. But this is something I've been involved in with this name for quite some time now, and primarily in the last few months. I didn't put that name public then, quite honestly, because I really didn't see any need to. But at this point, there's a need to. Mr. Martin.
Well, I got to admit, you know, Carlucci's one of my Facebook friends, because his posts were entertaining. So, but yeah, I know nothing of the, you know, the goings on in the South End. I did see on the news they hadn't named any, you know, who was shot, but actually, you know, a little shocked to hear who it is and hear who people are allegedly dealing with. So, wow.
Well, and that's the thing.
You can say what you want, but if in fact it's found out that he was coming up here to, you know, if the lady was threatened, then that shouldn't be considered. You know, that's a self defense case. You know, that's a hats off for the Second Amendment. If in fact he was in danger.
Which is why, of course, there's been no charges filed yet. But yeah. So anyway. I'm not the mainstream news. Once again, this is another example of what the mainstream news will not do. They won't go out there and put anything out there if they're worried about it. The fact that this guy has been linked and tied to Mayor Greg Fisher, Councilman David Yates, and beyond, to be quite honest with you, but I don't have any sources confirming the rest of the names that I've been told. But those names I feel comfortable telling you because they have been confirmed. But the fact that Carlucci has been tied to Fisher and Yates is a known criminal in this area that the police and nobody's doing anything about. And see, that's the big rub right there, because we know who these people are. The police have been told about these people. They've got every reason to take these type of people off the streets and out of the neighborhoods, and they don't do it. You know, now, the fact that his ex-hooker wife, or whoever she is an ex-hooker that was related with him, you know, shot him, shouldn't be a big surprise. When you live that life, it's what you're going to get. But I'm upset at the fact that nothing has been done about this guy all this time, you know, even knowing. And the only thing one can conclude is he had protection. When you feel comfortable talking to a mayor and a city councilman, you know, like David Yates and Mayor Greg Fisher, to sit here and wheel and deal with taxpayer money, you know, and that's what was discussed, that's an interesting concept. So I wanted to get into that at the beginning of the show. I had to make sure that everybody knew who it was. The mainstream news will probably report on it tomorrow. But I'll go ahead and I'll post all the information on the guy, including his arrest and all the other stuff, on the website at LouisvillePolitics.com in a very, very, very near future. But, you know, that's where we start. Now, last night, we started talking a little bit about what's going on in Louisville. I'm sorry, folks. Forgive me one second here. Kind of got tied up. We're talking about what's going on here in Louisville with some House races coming up and things like that. And, you know, so we got our good friend Paul Hossie. He's in a chat now. I'm going to get him on the air in just a few minutes. We had a light late-breaking stuff on Carlucci and the other things going on, so we didn't get a chance to take care of everything the way it should. But we now know that Phil Moffitt has decided to run for the State House 32nd District in a primary against former JCRP chair Shelley May. Ed, I'm still trying to figure out why they would put themselves in that position. Any idea?
They live in the 32nd. Yeah, as far as I know, you got to represent where you live, and it's just, hey, you know, I look at it as a good thing, bad thing. I like Shelley. I really like Phil, and you know, and some of his innovative ideas, which our state so desperately needs. But, you know, you can look at it either way. I think it's a Republican leaning district, so whoever wins the primary, I think they're going to get a decent rep either way. I do. It's like I say, Shelley, I've talked to her since she's announced, and her intentions are good. She's, you know, she's actually the destiny's child, and she's kind of leaning towards, you know, we got to take care of the disabled. She's going to be an advocate for that. Phil, on the other hand, gosh, Phil, since my daughter played baseball with his son, and they were tiny back then. And, You know, oh, they were. It was funny. But I've known Phil for a long time. And, of course, when he ran for governor, he was just chock full of ideas that had been vetted and you look at the stagnation in state government, they almost be considered revolutionary ideas with his taxes and stuff, with the tax reform. You know, in this state, it could use either one of them. I think it could use, because there's always problems with the disabled. There's always problems with the underprivileged and kids and stuff. Shelley would be a good advocate for that. Phil, you know, being a business person, it's like, oh, right, you want to talk taxes? Damn, let's do this.
Well, it's pretty interesting to me. I can't comprehend why he wants this race. But, you know, before we get too deep into that, let's go straight to the phones. Yeah, we've got Paul Hossie on the line with us. Paul, first of all, my apologies. I did not get a chance to call you right before the show. Everything was breaking so late. I'm a one-man show. I don't have the whole staff like all these other guys do. So I apologize for not getting a hold of you right before the show and discussing things. But anyway, we were talking last night about, you know, what's going on with some of these races, the Phil Moffitt, Shelley May, governor's race, all these other things. And we got to talking about Matt Bevin and the Mitch McConnell race as well. And what really became interesting to me is you had some conversations and met with some people and talked with some people in the Matt Bevin camp, and you had some information you could share. So I'm kind of curious, trying to understand is, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I had heard you tell us that Matt Bevin was not being included in any of the events. He was being excluded. And, of course, you were the ones who got one of the now infamous phone calls from the JCRP recommending Mitch McConnell in a primary, which doesn't make any sense. But go ahead and tell us what you know or what you can. I appreciate it, man. Fill us in.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I was got a phone call. It was on November 2nd, and it was 7:44. I was watching MMA, like every other red-blooded American male. And phone rang. It came up, caller ID, Jefferson County Republican Party. I thought, well, they're probably calling looking for money. And so I talked to a guy that, and I answered, and he said, is this Paul Hossie? And I, yes, it is. And he said, he identified himself and said, I'm calling on behalf of the Jefferson County Republican Party for the Mitch McConnell reelection campaign. Well, I've been in politics my entire life, and I thought that sounded unusual because, if I recall correctly, there was a primary. And so I asked him to repeat that, and he did. He said, he gave his name, calling from the Jefferson County Republican Party, and I'm wanting to know if you would help volunteer to help reelect Senator McConnell. And I paused for a little bit, and I said, I'm not really interested. Thank you very much. And okay, that's no problem. I understand your position, and thank you, and have a good night. And I thought, that's not right. No. If there's a primary, the party has to stay out of it. That's a big no-no. So I contacted the Bevin campaign and got a phone call back and an email, and I explained to them just exactly that. And apparently a lot of individuals got the same phone call. Now, in the course of our conversation.
Dale LaCruz did, I know that.
Yes, he did.
And apparently quite a few. And in the course of our conversation.
That has to fall when you call up Dale, and that's got to fall clearly into the whoops category.
Whoops, indeed.
Yeah, that's
well,
somebody
in the course of our conversation. In the course of our conversation with this individual from the Bevin campaign, it was discussed that apparently Matt is not being told about events, functions, get-togethers. And I happened to say, just in the course of the conversation, that I thought, oh, I assume this individual was simply using the phone banks down at the Republican Party headquarters and misspoke. And I was told that, no, In fact, the Bevin camp is not being allowed to use the phone banks down at the Republican Party headquarters.
That's
wait a minute.
Well, that's where I wanted to go because, you know, the guy's name that called you, the last name was Adams, and we're researching now to find out exactly which Adams that was. But, you know, what's interesting here is in their own bylaws, they've got their new bylaws on their website at LouisvilleGOP.com. And I read through those today, and what I see in those bylaws simply is this. Anybody in the JCRP can support any candidate they want on an individual basis, but they can't use resources or anything else. It's like me. If I'm a member of the JCRP and you're running for office, I can support you on my own all I want to. I can do anything I want to. But I cannot use the party resources in a primary to aid in that effort. So I have to make phone calls from my house and those kind of things. And that's where they're crossing the line. But apparently there is a big concerted effort to even keep Matt Bevin from knowing the basic details any candidate is entitled to, like events or what's going on.
There was an event out at Fern Creek here recently, I think for Jimmy Higdon, and a lot of the candidates were invited to come out and speak. Well, apparently Bevin's camp had to find out about it on their own. And from what I understand from some people that were there, that Bevin was getting the cold shoulder from a lot of the establishment candidates, which I thought was interesting. But to your point, Ed,
I can understand that. I mean, they're establishment candidates, and Mitch is still the money man. And as an individual, they're free to give him the cold shoulder if they want, an individual.
Absolutely. But they should, at least if they're going to have an event, make that information available to everybody.
Exactly. And it should be available to all candidates,
Yeah, and apparently that's not happening. But, you know, see, my understanding in terms of how parties should work is that if Camp A has access to party phone banks or resources, then the challenger candidate, Party B, has access to that same information. It's either they both get it or nobody gets it. And apparently that's not happening.
And see, and that's the major problem. You know, a lot of people think that I'm anti-Bevin because I have questions about Bevin and some of the things that he's been through. But I think that that's just being honest. I mean, when you're going to sit out here and run for office, you have to answer the questions. So, you know, and I don't feel like Matt Bevin has done a good job of that, you know, and some of the feedback I get, as I pointed out last night, is that he's very approachable, but he wants to do all the talking. And there's not anything wrong with that. That's not a negative thing. You know, well, that's not a negative thing. That's just putting out there what you know. So I have no problems with that, and a lot of people think that I'm trying to hawk for Mitch McConnell. That's not true either. I've got to say this. If Matt Bevin is not being treated equally by the party in the primary, you know, Matt Bevin has a new friend in me. I will tell you that right now, because the only thing, you know, we all know, we've all run for office, you know, and the only thing any of us have ever asked for is fair and equal treatment and coverage, period. That's it. Treat us fairly, treat us equally, and give us the opportunity to make our own
way. It doesn't even have to be equal. It just has to be fair. If you have bylaws,
well, fairness is equality.
Just abide by them. That's all you've got to do.
Yeah.
That's what we mean by equal, though. That's being equal, is abiding by the rules as they set them up. And they set up their own rules. So, you know, if they're not abiding by that, that's a problem.
And I'm kind of like you, Ed. I mean, you know, I don't really have a dog in that fight between McConnell and Bevin. I really don't have a dog in that fight. So it doesn't matter to me. But, you know, in the interest of fairness, I thought, you know, that's just not right. You know, if you're going to do for one, you do for the other. Yeah,
I'm 100% agreement. And I will fight to the end of time for Matt Bevin's right to be heard. I don't have to like him.
And I'll tell you what, and it's not just the Republicans. Like I say, Ed Marksberry, probably the most unapologetic liberal running for a major office in the state, you know, right as a Democrat. And the Democratic Party did the same thing to him. I mean, they were, they just basically shut him out to the point he went independent. You know, so it's like it's not just the Republicans. The Democrats are every bit as bad, if not worse, about it. And, you know, that's an embarrassment on the state. I mean, if the national press ever got hold of it, it's like, oh, well, here's how they play in Kentucky. Whoever has the most money, the rules don't apply anymore.
Well, we're actually going to get to the most money thing in a minute, believe it or not, with some other races. But it is interesting, though, because, you know, as we talked a little bit last night about the ruling in Tennessee with Thomasick and everything else, the libertarians have I think they've got a valid choice now to be allowed to be treated as an equal party, and there's some research going on with that. I talked to a friend of mine today who may have an option to help with that. But the reality is these two parties, you know, you guys are both right. They want to set the stage for their outcome, not the outcome of we the people. They don't want us to decide anything. They want us to decide on the choices that's given to us, not make our own choices on who we want to represent us. And I think this is a great example of that. I've been a victim of that. You guys have been a victim of that. But in this case, I finally had enough. So the Matt Bevin people who actually listen to this show, and I'm sure there's somebody listening tonight, you know, I've reached out to you guys once. You guys have not responded back. Here's a second opportunity. You want some airtime? You want equality? Call us. 502-742-8519 is the office number. But, you know, it is interesting because we not only have this stuff going on, then we've got idiots out there, clowns like James Young, who act like he's somebody who's not. He don't have one vote in his pocket, and he's out there doing some lying, too, trying to kiss the butt of people like McConnell. Tell us a little bit about that situation.
Well, I had heard in another conversation with the same individual that apparently James is has made it known that he is has the South End wrapped up. I think it was how the expression was put. And you know, and like I said to the person I was talking to, in our group out here, we have a pretty large, active group of conservatives. Some are Democrats, some are Republicans, some are independent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we all kind of work together because we're interested in improving the South End, period. You know, what kind of letter they had behind their name is irrelevant. It's what's good for the South End, what's good for the people out here. And, you know, I really can't think of anybody that that I would say is in – anybody's pocket or that is wrapped up to use the expression. So I had to explain to him that was not exactly accurate.
What was so fascinating is this clown, and folks, he's a nobody. He's an early 20s guy who's basically claimed to fame was running around on John Brewer's coattails screaming about abortion and then kissing Trey Grayson's butt, getting some kind of a meaningless job when he was Secretary of State. You know, here's the thing. When you talk about conservatives and South End and stuff, I think you make the greatest distinction in the world. People who want to move forward aren't hung up on the D, the R, the I, the L, the G, any other letter you have behind your name. They're hung up on values and ethics and morals and integrity. And that's what the conservatives in the South End, the real conservatives in the South End are doing, regardless of party affiliation. I have just as many, and this blows people away when I tell them this, but I have just as many friends who are Democrats that I work with every day as I do Republicans, independents, libertarians. You know, that's the way it is. We all share common core values on moving forward. Now, none of us are ever going to agree on the stupid stuff that separates us, the abortion, the gun rights, things like that. But those are Supreme Court decisions that have been made. They don't have a damn thing to do with our daily lives and surviving in our communities. So when we finally realized that we're not going to sit here and waste our time arguing over divisive stuff that nobody could do anything about and started focusing on the things we can, we realized we have more in common than anybody could possibly imagine. So now we work together to get those things accomplished. People like James Young, out there have a single
agenda.
Which is
basically jobs, education, and crime.
Sure.
Get it fixed,
and
let's move on.
We want to clean up our neighborhoods and give people an opportunity to succeed. That's it. It's as simple as that. But you have people out there like this James Young clown, and there's a few other ones out there just like him, and I'll be honest with you. I'll call out names. I call it the Dan Sein bunch. There's a reason Dan Sein was redistricted to get most of his district in Bullock County, because if he stayed in Jefferson County, the majority of his district was here. He was out next election. There's no doubt about that. You know, his power is completely gone, especially since David Williams moved out of the Senate. That was the only cover Dan Sein had. Now, I like Dan Sein. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to trash Dan Sein. I think Dan Sein has done an average job while he's been in there. His biggest claim to fame was the vet testing. How many years ago was that? But Dan does not have the power and the control that, that everybody thinks he does. So you get these young idiots like Young and them out there that want to sit here and try to act like they're something they're not. The problem is when you do that, you destroy the base in trying to get things done. James Young doesn't have one vote of anybody other than James Young. The people that he's working with and talking to, you know, including the big-name people, I'm not going to throw them under the bus, are the same ones who are calling me and laughing every time James Young acts like he's somebody because they can't stand the guy. But they're not dumb enough to tell him to get the hell away from him because a guy will, he will, give him credit where it's due, he will send out a flyer, he will call on a phone and work a phone bank, and he'll do the little things to try to get people to the polls. Nobody likes him, but they'll use anybody they can for free. That's James Young, but he's not alone. There's a lot of people like that. So, you know, the conservative word was the right word to use, Paul. I totally agree with you. But so where do we go from here? How does Matt Bevin get equal treatment? How do we get the conservatives really united in this race and make an issue? Because I, for one, as much as I think that Matt Bevin is probably on the losing side of this race, I, for one, am getting sick of this kind of politics from the so-called party leadership. What do we do, Paul? Where do we go?
Well, I understand that at the next executive meeting, which I believe is next Wednesday, there's going to be what's the expression, a come-to-Jesus meeting?
I thought they always did that at GOP meetings. Go ahead.
I guess they do. I don't know. but I understand there's going to be a definite discussion over, you know, what you can and you can't do according to the bylaws. I've had that, the incident with dealing with the bylaws, where the bylaws were suspended several years back. But they're going to be calling that out at the next meeting. So perhaps a lot of people, you know, that got these phone calls need to show up at the GOP headquarters next week and let them know what they think about it. Let them know that that's not acceptable behavior, not from the GOP.
Well, I think totally agree with you.
That's a good start. I think the next thing to do is maybe that we need to find a way. I say we collectively, we, not you know, you and I or anything.
Right.
But we need to get maybe an opportunity for the Bevin camp to come out to the South End and talk to us, the South End, about what he brings to the table. You know, what can he do for us, the South End? I think that might be something that could be done. If he can make his case, great, fine. If he can't, well, too bad, too sad.
Well, yeah, it's all about opportunity. That's the thing. I don't care if any candidate. I mean, quite frankly, and Ed Martin will back us up, and we're going to go to break and get in on it in just a minute. But, quite frankly, this show, the mission of MVM Radio and everything else has always been to bring equality, bring the issues and the candidates to the voters, and let them make up their own mind. You know, we have had plenty of Democrats on air with us. We've had Tyler Allens. We've had people, Michael Slayton's. We've had all kinds of people. We've had the independents, Michael Lewis.
Mike Slayton will always have the distinction of being probably the most progressive and the very first progressive to come on our show.
You betcha. And Michael really appreciate the opportunity because this show isn't about pounding you. We're going to call out your flaws, and your faults we always have, but we do that on both sides. We're equal opportunity haters. But it's interesting because Democrats, for some reason right now, will not go on anything other than a favorable show. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine today, the Leland Conway show, for example. Leland took over from Andy Connell at HAS, and I don't like to give them plugs because we're bigger than they are, but it's okay. We'll plug this one. But Mandy Connell left HAS. Mandy Connell had a segment every week. She had John Yarnby practically every Friday on her show. Now, it's not a friendly show. It's not a friendly atmosphere for John Yarnby because Mandy Connell is really ultra-conservative. And they get into it and scratch and claw just like a couple of cats fighting in the kitchen. But he came on. Well, now that Leyland has taken over, now you don't see John Yarmuth going on there as a Democrat. You don't see any other Democrats going to his show because they're scared to. Now that they've got out of that situation that they started with Mandy Connell, they don't want anything to do with it because they're scared of repercussions. So I think that's pretty interesting. But the Democrats have the right to be heard. Nobody's stopping them. The underprivileged candidates like Matt Bevin have the right to be heard. We're not stopping them. It's the mainstream that's screwing them up, and that's because that's their own fault for allowing that to happen. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, We're going to get back to the meat and potatoes, folks. We're going to get back to the Phil Moffitt story. We're also going to talk about more about Mitch McConnell, Matt Bevin, and Allison Lundigan Grimes. So stay tuned, sit tight. We'll be right back. This is the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Folks, I hope you guys like that nice mellow music. I try to get everybody fired up from time to time, and then I got to bring you back down. So, you know, I appreciate you sticking with us. We're back at the Ed Spencer Show here on the MVM Radio Network. And we're talking a lot of things. We're talking about how the JCRP is being unfair in a primary with all their candidates, including Matt Bevin. But another interesting story, we've mentioned that Phil Moffitt is running for the 32nd State House. We've mentioned that Shelley May is running for the 32nd State House. And I'm kind of confused by that. Because most people from the outside looking in, if we're going to sit here and talk about the establishment, Shelley May is a former JCRP chair. She just resigned a few months ago because she's now working as a legislative aide for Councilman Kevin Cramer for Metro Government. And now she's going to go ahead and decide to run for the 32nd State House District that Julie Adams is giving up so that she can come back to Louisville and try to run for Metro Council seat. Then you've got Phil Moffitt, who happens to be Republican, a Tea Party Libertarian Republican, who just ran for governor in the last election against David Williams in the primary. Moffitt came in second with 38% of the vote, and now he's decided to forego running for governor again and opted for this state house race in a primary against Shelley May. So Shelley May is the establishment candidate. Phil Moffitt is the anti-establishment candidate. What I don't get here is why Phil Moffitt wants to run for this particular seat. Now, I know publicly he stated that, you know, his kids are teenagers. He doesn't want to be away a year on the road campaigning for governor, that he needs to be at home. This is a perfect thing for him. But for me, from a purely analytical point of view, and Ed, I want you to key in on this, from a purely analytical point of view, if Phil Moffitt loses this primary, running for governor down the road is probably not an option. So what is to be gained or lost here?
Well, I would actually respect a person that just runs for a race for a reason other than what it sets him up for in the future. You know, and I think Phil ran for governor. And, I haven't we haven't sat down and had pizza for a while, but he ran for governor. I think he sees he can see the writing on the wall. I mean, as far as the Republicans go, Comer is easily a pick. I mean, nobody's even close to Comer right now. course, popularity and, you know, statewide. So,
right.
You know, I think he sees that. But, you know, I just take him at what he said. He says, you know, I can relate to that. He's got teenage kids. You know, one
well,
has the exact same age as my daughter because, like I said, they play ball together.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's fair enough. You know, a lot of us still talk. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
Ed,
A lot of what Phil ran on
as the governor, you know, in the governor's race, a lot of what he talked about is the kind of things that he could affect change, you know, if he ran based on trying to affect change and you know, modernizing our tax code and stuff. These are things that he could, you know, get an audience. These are things that
I totally agree with you there as a state rep. Well, I totally agree with you there. He's going to talk about charter schools, of course, overhauling the state tax code. He's also going to talk about public pension plans. I'm totally with what he's trying to fight for. And like I said, I have no dog in this fight because I like Shelley Mann. I like Phil Moffitt. So I'm not taking sides here, but I'm looking at the bigger picture here. You know, Phil has made it very, very clear that he wants to be governor someday. And I'm just curious if there's going to be any repercussions if he loses this primary against Shelley May, and it's highly possible. This is one primary that can go either way. And it's highly possible if he loses that primary against Shelley May as the outsider candidate and gets labeled as a two-time loser, as an outsider libertarian Tea Party Republican, you know, how is that going to help him in the future for that governor's race? Because he makes no bones about it. That's what he wants. Paul Hossie, you've been in a lot of stuff for 35 years. What do you think about this? Good move,
yeah,
bad move,
well,
other?
I think it's a smart move, and I'll tell you the reason I think it's a smart move. One, there is a anti-government mood in Kentucky and across the United States, for one. So that helps him. I think Phil brings a little bit more experience to the table than Shelley. But also, typically what happens is when you move in, you take over a district, your old rep retires, gets defeated, goes out, you come in, you typically take over the committees that district has. And if you look at what Adams has, she has banking and insurance, she has education, economic development and tourism, health and welfare, post-secondary education. I mean, these are great good committees to be on if you're thinking down the road that you want to be governor. These are great committees to be on. Banking and insurance, excellent. You know, economic
development,
tourism.
Well, the only thing Julie cares about right now when it comes to economic development is her own pension. That's the only reason she's stepping out of state.
Right.
She wants to pad her own pension. You know,
okay,
so
but if Phil wins, or for that matter, Shelley wins, these are the committees that they're going to be assigned to. You usually take over that individual's committees. So
right.
if Phil's thinking governor, those are some really great committees that he would be assigned to really develop some contacts for down the road, particularly financial contacts.
Well, we know Jerry Miller. Well, we know Jerry Miller worked with the tourism and everything else under former Governor Ernie Fletcher. He's now on a Metro
mm-hmm.
Council, and he is stepping up to run for a state Senate seat. So,
yeah,
we know all of these things.
Well, Jerry's running for the state House seat.
My apologies. Let's go to the phones. Mayo, you're on the air, man. What's going on?
Oh, not much yet. I mean, kind of going back a little earlier, I get a little late. I was just kind of curious with these phone calls. Could that be for what do they call them? The leadership PACs. It's money that they call and they say, oh yeah, it's for senator or congressman or whatever, so and so, and it basically goes into a slush fund that they can use for whatever they want.
You know, that's a good question, Paul. They were basically asking if you were willing to help Mitch McConnell, right? They didn't
mention
money or anything else. Okay,
nothing
all right.
at all.
Yeah. It's just possible, me. I mean, you never know. It sounds to me, because so many people are getting these phone calls, you know, and as my good friend Ed Martin pointed out, for somebody to call Dale Gillespie, they were probably brain dead that night. But when you look at the reality, it sounds to me like what they were trying to do was set up volunteers for the door-to-door campaigns, the phone banks, and all that other stuff. But they were illegally using the resources of the party to do so, you know, because they were not allowing Matt Bevin equal opportunity, and that is the biggest problem with that going forward. You know, to move back to the Moffitt thing, though, you know, Paul Hossie, I agree with you. It probably is a good move, but I'm more concerned about the future because the reality is Shelley May probably, in this particular situation, when we talk about, you know, the tourism, you have to put all these events together and all this stuff, Shelley May has incredible talent at that. She's got plenty of experience doing that. Phil Moffitt typically doesn't. That's not normally his thing. You know, so, I mean, he's used to campaigning, but the hands-on to that kind of stuff is generally not something he does. So when it comes to experience for those things, Shelley May is going to be able to tout that experience in this race. Now, of course, Phil Moffitt has all the business experience in the world. He's a co-founder of his own telecommunications management company. You know, he is very informed on the issues. He's very involved in the issues. I mean, he's practically a one-man army in Kentucky on the issue of charter schools and improving public education. So, you know, Phil Moffitt has plenty of skills to bring to the table himself. So I'm not sure that the committees, in my opinion, are going to be that big of a deal in the race itself.
I'm not thinking in terms of the race itself. I'm thinking in terms if he wins the race and he's still thinking of governor, those committees will be very, very useful.
Okay, fair enough. I agree with that. Martin.
Well, I think, you know, and you were questioning Phil running. If he loses this race, does that hurt his chance for governor? Well, yeah. You know, at that point, it could also serve as a reality check. I mean, if you get beat in your own neighborhood, then you may be out of your element in the state. I think I'll just take Phil and Shelley at their word that this is a, you know, it's, let's face it, we all know it's a part-time job. So it allows time for family and stuff, and they both have family needs, and they're good family people. They want to spend time with their family. Bingo, you know, good stuff.
Well, I know what Shelley sacrificed for her family. She has a special needs child of her own, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of energy, and I've got all the respect in the world for her for what she puts up with that because I'm used to that. But go ahead.
Yep. Okay, so I think I just take them at their word. I think they both want to do the right thing when they get to Frankfort. You know, if Phil has aspirations to get higher, then, you know, getting a state office and affecting state policy and no doubt making connections at a state level, it would be beneficial. But it gets down to it. This is, you know, I don't even look at that. They're not in my district. I sometimes think, well, good, but maybe not so good. It's like, at least I don't have to vote for one or the other because I like them both. But beyond that, I just take it that they see the seats that they could get, the committees they could get, and I think they both have decent ideas, both politically active. So I don't think it's a thing that we're planning for the next step or anything like that. I think it's just it works for where people are in life, and it works for where their fields of expertise are.
Well, let's move a little bit beyond. I mean, Mayo, and your mic's still open, too, by the way. But let's move a little bit beyond. Let's talk about this governor thing. Is it possible that Phil decided to make this run? Because when you look at the governor, the picture for the Republican candidate for governor right now, there's only three names that really pop up. Jamie Comer's at the top of the list, Phil Moffitt, and Louisville right here, Hal Heiner as well. You know, I think it would be harder than hell for anybody in Louisville to get to be the governor in a general election. So I think it would be hard for Hal Heiner or Phil Moffitt to be elected governor because they are from Louisville and there's such a stigma attached to that. But is it possible that maybe Phil sees the way that the cards are running? You know, insiders tell me that Jamie Comer is definitely going to run for governor. Jamie is actually doing everything right from the public standpoint, in my opinion, by telling the whole world we're not going to talk about that until after the elections next year because right now the focus should be on the other candidates. And I think that's exemplary for Jamie Comer to put that out there. But, you know, if Jamie Comer is going to run for governor, and all indications are that he will, you know, he's got to be the top runner. So do you really want to run against a guy that, you know, you're pretty sure you're going to lose against and make you a two-time primary loser? So is that why Phil decided to run for state house so that he could prop his name up and put him in a position to run for governor down the road? You know, is that part of the thought process? Because, and let me tell you, to be real clear.
I don't think so. I think it's just, like I said, I think it's like myself. I mean, I would look at it in a similar fashion. it's your kids are a certain age, you're at a certain point in your career, you know, you've done what you've done so far politically, you lost, you know, so did I, so did you, and now he's looking at a realistic race that he, you know, thinks, okay, this fits for where he is right now. I don't, with our, now that we can re-elect governors, I don't think, you know, if Comer gets in, does a good job, I don't think anybody's, you know, if you're going to sit there and put scenarios together, you look at it, and let's just say Comer wins, or Elon wins, and they do a good job, you know, God forbid, Jack Conway runs.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's just say Comer wins or somebody like Elon wins, and they do a halfway decent job, they're going to be there for, the, you know, a decade. So
right.
Most of us are at that age. It's like, you know, a decade down the road, hell no, I'm not going to get into politics. Too old. I'm going fishing.
Well, you know, and again, I want to be real clear. I'm not even trying to put out that Phil Moffitt has the ulterior motive and he's just using this and all the other shit. Moffitt actually, folks, is a guy of integrity. And in my opinion, so is Shelley May. So it's, you know, I'm not going down that road. I'm not trying to accuse Moffitt of anything because I know Phil. We've talked to Phil. We've had Phil on the show. And believe me when I tell you that as sincere as Shelley May is in what she does, Phil Moffitt is equally as sincere in what he does. And there's a lot of respect for both of these guys accordingly. But I tell you somebody I have no respect for. And this is these quacks, Alison London and Grimes running for the U.S. Senate. You know, I've never been had any love lost for the Mitch McConnell campaign, but check this out. Alison London and Grimes, as we know, we talked about it last week, took in about $2.7 million. And we now know more about where it's coming from. I'm sorry, it's $2.1 million. And now we know it, most of it's coming from Hollywood.
Which 2.1, which mind you is way below what they said they thought they could raise and what they said they needed to raise.
Well, sure. What was fascinating is basically a third of that came from Hollywood. Ben Affleck, Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage filed bankruptcy, but he's got enough money to give to Alison London and Grimes the maximum contribution amount. He can give her, but he filed bankruptcy. He hasn't got the money for anything else, but he can give a campaign contribution. That was interesting to me. You know, not, you know, I understand people file bankruptcy.
Well,
I got no problem with bankruptcy.
With National Treasure movies, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, I've got no problem.
I love
you know,
those
hard
movies,
times,
by the way.
Well, hard times hit everybody, including me. You know, I mean, I understand that. And I understand if you got to take bankruptcy to save. And it's not a problem for me. But what is a problem for me is the fact that he's out making political contributions during that time. That just doesn't seem quite right. But you got Ben Affleck, Nicolas Cage, DiCaprio, Steven Spielberg, all of these people in California who gave the maximum amounts to Alison London and Grimes of $5,200. But she got $700,000 total from these guys. That's pretty incredible. In Kentucky, Grimes only got $500,000. She got more in California for her race than she did from Kentuckians. You know, so that tells us a lot right there. I've got some problems with that.
Funny
now,
thing
to
is,
be fair, go ahead.
I was going to say the funny thing is here just recently she took the same stance as McConnell did on, what is it, in Cambridge, Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
or Tennessee, on a clean-burning coal plant. So she,
right.
you know, she goes and touts the, coal is nasty and everything out to California, but then comes back and you know, basically ad hoc, you know, quotes everything, you know, McConnell did. Oh, yeah, we
right.
want clean coal. Kentucky's a clean, you know, a coal state. We want to do this and that.
Right.
Which is it? You know, have some principles
that's
and stand
true.
On them.
Well, that's very true. And that's the problem with Alison London and Grimes.
Well,
she's just like
and
every
and
other
I think,
person.
I think that's in large part because I don't think the Hollywood crew really gives a crap. I just say it. I don't think they really give a crap about the environment. I mean, let's face it. They got expensive toys that fly all over the place. You know, it ain't nothing to burn at a thousands of pounds of fuel to go to the French Riviera or check out, you know, or Cannes Film Festival. They don't give a crap.
I don't think that.
They don't like a guy like Mitch McConnell, so they'll throw money at whoever they think can make him look bad. That's all it is. They don't give a crap about the environment. Ted Begley does. That's about it.
Well, let's be clear here, too, though. I mean, you know, for one thing, I don't think that if they don't give a crap, I think that the people in Hollywood live in an alternate universe from the rest of us. They don't live
in
reality. They've got handlers. They've got staffers. They don't even know how much money they've got. They just told what to do, when to do it, and then they do whatever they want to do, but nobody's there to tell them, and that's why they get in trouble. But, you know, it's interesting because she took $700,000 from California, 34% of her take, took $500,000, just over 24% of the total, right here in Kentucky. D.C. was third at $182,000, and New York came in fourth at $180,000. What's interesting here is, and of course the largest California contributions came from DreamWorks Animation. I guess I'll have to stop going to see those movies. And believe it or not, this is in the Courier. You guys can actually check these numbers out. But what's interesting here is, you know, Mitch McConnell and them are acting like California is such a big, bad deal, and Alison Lundy Graham should basically be ashamed of herself. They're not telling the whole world that since his reelection in 2008, Mitch McConnell has taken in more than $1.1 million from California. So, you know, he's got the same ties in California, and that's what we continue coming back to, that there's really no difference in the candidates. By comparison,
well,
Matt Bevin...
There's conservatives in California, but to some degree, it's like, mind your own business. Just get your state screwed up enough as it is, we'll settle our messes.
Well, okay, but I mean, I get sick of the fact that outsiders are buying our elections. This should be a Kentucky situation, but... You know, in comparison, and this is why I continue saying that Matt Bevin has some problems. Because it doesn't matter whether you think Matt Bevin is the second coming of Jesus Christ when it comes to politics. You can think that you love Matt Bevin, you can hate Matt Bevin. But the reality is, as a candidate, and we all know this, we've run for office, with the exception of Mayo. You know, we've all run for office. The reality is it takes money. And here's the problem. You've got over $2.1 or $2.5 million by Grimes. You've got a bunch coming from California for her. You've got a bunch coming from Mitch McConnell, over $1 million from California for him. And then you've got Matt Bevin sitting here. He reported $222,000 in the last quarter. He reported $222,000 in the last quarter. And he also made a $600,000 loan to his own campaign. And as of the end of September, he only had about $165,000 on hand, of which is his own money. So, you know, here you've got a guy who has basically run his campaign so far, yeah, for about $600,000 or $700,000, and these guys have already spent millions. And that's where Matt Bevin has the problem, because he can't overcome the money disadvantage. So this grassroots thing has really got to take off. And, you know, the approachable thing is always going to be great, don't get me wrong, but some of the stuff that's coming back that he doesn't really want to listen. You know, you can't have those kind of negatives out there publicly when you don't have any money. You've got to be all things to all people. And I'm just not sure Matt Bevin is getting the right advice right now. But he's certainly not going to have the money advantage. He has an uphill climb as it is. So it's really interesting that the rest of the nation is buying our Kentucky Senate seat when we've got a guy from Kentucky getting his money from Kentucky isn't going to be able to make a dent because he can't get enough of it. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and which actually throw further irony into it is makes you wonder why, we have the issues we do with the Jefferson County Republican Party right now.
There you go.
Matt Bevin only got this much money, you know, let Mitch fight his own fights. Really? this is not a fair fight. I don't think Mitch really needs your help.
Well, see, and I think that's the problem, because Mitch McConnell has somewhere around $10 million in the bank anyway as we speak. And I think that's really the problem, because he started with a war chest. So, you know, the party is basically looking at the future. They're looking at the general election is what they're looking at. They know that Alison Lundigan Grimes, even though she fell a little bit short in the first quarter what they were hoping to get, they know that she's going to have Steve Beshear and the Democrats in the state backing her. They also know that typically – on a national stage, that we typically vote conservative in Kentucky. That's why Mitch McConnell has been here so long. Rand Paul is there now. We've got Tom Massey in the House. You know, on a national stage, we typically vote Republican, and on a local stage and a state stage, we typically vote Democrat. So we've got all of these different variables in place here. And, you know, the thing for me, I guess, the reason they're worried about Matt Bevin is because Matt Bevin can talk about Mitch McConnell's ghost a hell of a lot earlier that they want to talk about it. You know what I mean? And that's what we're looking at right now. Matt Bevin can bring up the negatives and hurt Mitch McConnell, even if he loses. And all indications are, and it's no offense to Matt Bevin, but when you're outspent, you're outmanned, you're outgunned, typically you're going to lose. You know, and that's what he's facing right now. So I think it's a really interesting dynamic, and I know why they're attacking him, because they want to attack him and shut him up before he has a chance to damage McConnell going into the general. But it is interesting. It really is an interesting paradigm. I tell you what, we've got all kinds of different things to get into, but as usual, we're running late in the hour. Tomorrow night, I guess we'll get into some of these school suspensions of five-year-olds. And, of course, Obamacare. We'll get into that tomorrow night with Dale the Truth. Paul Hossie, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate the information. I really, really do. Mayo,
anytime,
thanks so much for the call. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Ed Martin, final thoughts.
Oh, man, final thoughts. What a we bounced all over everything today. You know, final thoughts, I guess it touch on that last subject. You know, personally, I take it as a bit of an insult. I mean, I guess it's good in a way if you're a marketing company or a broadcast company to have all this money coming in. But sometimes I see the Californians, the D.C., the New Yorkers and stuff putting all their money into our elections, you know. And I say on one hand, it's like, well, thanks for noticing. But on the other hand, I cannot help myself but to think, you know, what do they think of us? So they're going to buy our election. You get this little poor little old state with, you know, a little over 4 million people. You know, you can make your big money donations. You can impact, you know, you can basically pick our next senator. You know, because we're poor and small. Fight me. Stay out of our business.
Well, I like the way you put that. I tell you, it's interesting for me because, you know, the one thing that the Democrats or liberals are scared of is because Mitch McConnell is the minority leader. And as much as they would like to ignore this and try not to acknowledge it, there is a possibility that the Republicans can gain seats in the Senate next year. And maybe by some freak accident of nature, Mitch McConnell becomes Senate majority leader. And I think that's the real fear, and that's why they're trying to pound and help Alison Leonard Grimes around the whole country. And, you know, she goes to Martha's Vineyard, California, you name it, 45 different states. You know, it's sad reality that in American politics that we no longer spend our time trying to worry about the people we represent. We spend our time, the majority of our time, trying to get money from anybody we can. That's what's wrong with our election process. Is the amount of money required to even think about it. People like Matt Bevin, for example, you know, Matt Bevin, 20 years ago, probably had an equal shot as anybody in a primary. But the state today is it has become so monumentally expensive that if you don't have a few million dollars right out of the gate, you're not going to have a chance. And that's what's happening to Matt Bevin. He is going to be outspent. He's going to be outmanned. And he's going to be outgunned. He may be the better candidate. I don't know. And maybe I'll be wrong and prove a wrong primary day. I don't know. But I do know it's awful hard to overcome a $10 million war chest from an incumbent when you're only spending about $600,000 to date. That's a scary thing. That's why we need to revisit real campaign finance reform and make some changes to make it equitable. On the flip side, Phil Moffitt, Shelley May, this is a race to watch this year. For us state political junkies right here in Kentucky, the Phil Moffitt-Shelley May primary is going to be the race to watch in the 32nd House. It's going to be interesting to see the anti-establishment take on the establishment and see what really happens, you know, come May. We'll know more then. In the meantime, that's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, I will be joined by Dale the Truth Gillespie. We're going to get into some of the stuff I just can't even believe. Kids being suspended from school at 5, 6, and 7 years old over nothing. Then we're going to start talking about some of the whole Benghazi cover-up and some other things going into Hillary Clinton. So you want to make sure you tune in for that. In the meantime, folks, that's a wrap for tonight. Have a great night, and thank you so much for joining us. Mr. Martin, take care, man.
Yes, sir. Have yourself a good week, Mr. Springfield.
Yes, sir. You too. Thank you. We'll see you, folks.